Hello and welcome to another Audio Mo. This is day 11. Hello everyone, welcome to another Audio Mo, day 11 as I said. Today we are going to be carrying on as we left yesterday with Claire telling us about her heart transplant journey. So this is Heart 2. See what we did there? So I think we left where we were introducing George, or at least Claire was, and then we're going to move through the next part of the journey. I may split it up because I think there's 15 minutes left on this part, so we'll do probably this being the middle part and then Heart 3. But enjoy, this is a recording that we made while out and about having some food. And you know what to do if you want to listen to more Audio Mo's. Follow the Audio Mo hashtag. Speak to you in a bit. And what do we call it?
Heart two.
Of something.
Two of hearts.
Two of, loads of titles for it.
Exactly.
Anyway, but Claire's going to... So we got to the point where...
So they got to the point where I was going to be sent home to, wend my merry way up to the great outdoors.
And in came George.
In came George. Now, George is the bluntest person I've ever met in my entire life. And for somebody who speaks my mind with gay abandon...
That speaks your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is... Okay. That's kind of one of those... But he gets things done. So George came to see me and he said, hello, my name's George. I am one of the consultants. And what we're going to do is we're going to do this procedure called a TOE. Now, a TOE is a bit like a heart scan combined with a endoscopy, if you've ever had one. So what they do is they put probes on your heart and they have a look at your heart, but they also put a probe down your throat. And that basically enables them to see your heart from both sides. It's like a 3D scan.
Yeah.
And to do that, they spray this spray in your throat, which numbs it. And it tastes like rotten bananas. And then they sedate you. And then they do the test. And
you
then,
don't like bananas.
Yeah. So let's the reason why there. I crashed was that was the procedure they sent me down for to see the first time.
It's fair to say you were very, very ill at that point.
I was horrendously ill at that point. So I crashed spectacularly under the TOE. And so I said, no, I'm sorry, George. You're not doing it. It's not happening. Absolutely no way, no. And he said, but you were a lot weaker then, and that's why you crashed, and we're going to do it in 6 hours' time. Absolutely no. So then came another doctor, and he and George went and had a chat, and they said, okay, we'll do it in a week, and we'll do it in intensive care so that you're closely monitored. Great. So I was starting to get out of bed, starting to do really well.
Do you want to say anything about the fact that initially he thought you were not open for...
No, that came later.
Okay.
Yeah, that came later. So, basically, we...
You were doing it
I was doing
night.
Well, yeah. Woke up one night, sat up, and everything went spinning, and I rang the bell, and I said, I feel really, really ill, really, really dizzy. And there's an open window, and you're really clammy, heart rate's really low. Called in the team, and the team came to see me, a guy called Adam, and he's like, Claire, can you hear me yet? Can hear you? Just put my phone there, just do this. And then he's like, keep him eye. And then he said, yeah, we'll put the pads on. So they put all these pads on my chest. And on top, my heart rate is dropping to like 4, 3, 2, done.
Yeah.
Now what they don't tell you, and not everybody, it doesn't happen to everyone, is that when they give you, when you go into cardiac arrest, is that your brain doesn't always stop. You don't always lose consciousness straight away.
Yeah.
Because your brain still has oxygen.
But they didn't know that until recently. There's been some studies on this more recently.
And because of that, I was still awake. Even though my heart stopped, I was still awake when they started compressions. And I have vivid memories of having chest compressions. Mm. And it is brutal.
Mm.
And I remember saying, please stop. And I don't know whether I actually said it or whether I just thought it in my head. My memory says I said it, but I don't think I did, if that makes sense. Mm. I think likely I didn't. And then I lost consciousness. And then I woke up the next day and my parents were there and I'd had a cardiac arrest. And three cardiac arrests, in fact, and had very nearly died.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, what? You know, I am invincible, if nothing else. And I woke up and then started to come back. And then they did the TOE a couple of days later.
Under ICU conditions.
And at that point, George came to see me and he said to me, how is your... what we want to do is we want to do something called a mitral clip, which is like a valve replace part of synthetic valve replacement. They don't cut you open. They basically go in through the groin and they insert this device into your heart, and then we're going to fit you with an ICD, which is like an internal defibrillator to protect your heart from further cardiac arrest. Cool, that's great. And then they did the mitral clip, and then he came to see me again. He said, how are you feeling? I said, I'm fine. He said, "How are you happy?" He says, George, are you happy? Yeah, your future is very bleak. I'm like, oh, great. He said, basically, the mitral clip is an interim measure. You are going to need a transplant. But the reason why we did the mitral clip is because it's hopefully going to help your heart to heal to the extent that your pressures will come down. And then that means that we can do the transplant in the future.
Because you need to be ill enough for the transplant, but
well enough to survive it.
Yeah. God, it's noisy out here. Oh, yeah.
And so I had my mitral clip fitted, went home, rebuilt my life. Seriously, rebuilt my life.
Yeah.
Was then referred to Papworth, went to see them. At that point, things weren't going quite the way we wanted, but I went home, did everything I was told. Lockdown came. I walked 10,000 steps a day around my house. I got a dog. I got a job. And I just gradually started thinking that, great, I've escaped.
Yeah,
you know, I'm living a normal life now.
Might not need it.
And then about end of 24, I started feeling a bit more tired. But I was working a lot of hours, yeah, and we were really busy.
And lots of weird shifts, like slide shifts.
Yeah, weird shifts at work and stuff. I just thought it was my job. Went to clinic, heart failure clinic, because I'm still in heart failure at this point. Went to heart failure clinic and they said, how are you feeling? And I told them, and he said, well, your ankles are a little bit swollen. I think what we're going to do is we're going to just put your diuretics up a little bit. At that point, I was on a fluid restriction, so restricted as to how much I could eat or drink. I went home. He said, I'll see you in a year. All being well. And that was on the Wednesday. And the next Monday, just before I started work, my phone rang and I answered it. And this woman said, and it's a Cambridge number. I nearly didn't answer. I thought it was a scammer.
Mm-hmm.
And I answered the phone and this woman said, oh, well, hello, is that Claire? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, hi, Claire. My name's Lisa. I'm one of the transplant nurses. And as soon as she said that, I knew what she was going to say. And basically, she said, your bloods have come back such that what we think you need to come in and have a bit of an assessment. We call it an MOT, she said, just to see how your heart is working and what we need to do in the future.
Yeah.
It's a transplant assessment, basically. And you go in and have all these tests. And at the end of that, he said to me, the question is, are you sick enough to need a transplant? And the answer to that is yes. He said, are you well enough at the moment? He said, lung pressures are still too high, but they are not insurmountable.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is increase your diuretics, and hopefully that will bring them down to a degree. So he did that, and we'll see you again in January. January came, and I saw a different doctor, and she said, your pressures haven't really come down, and so now we only have one option, and that's to bring you in and put you on to a drug called dopamine, which will help bring down your lung pressures, and that will put you in a suitable position for transplant.
But that means it doesn't elevate your mood because it's in your bloodstream.
It doesn't go, it's not through the brain, it doesn't break that barrier. But that means that you will be on the urgent list, and that means that you will have to stay in until a heart is found.
Yeah, in the hospital. In Cambridge.
So I went into Papworth in February of 2025, and at that point, I basically... Oh, you walk around, you make friends with people, it's boring as, you know. But Papworth is not a standard NHS hospital. You get separate rooms and things like that. So from a comfort point of view, I could have done a lot worse. And the staff are lovely, and the dog was allowed to visit, and you know, that kind of thing. So I did okay, really. Mm-hmm. And in April, I had my first call, which was in the middle of the night, and they said there is a suitable heart. And the suitable heart happened, but once they got the heart out, they realised that the donor had coronary artery disease, and so the heart was not viable. So I didn't have that transplant. Then I had my second call a week later, and this one was a different type of heart. It's called a DCD heart, which is where the person is not brain dead, but they have unsurvivable injuries, and yeah, basically they have been let go, and then what they do is they take the heart and they put it on a device that keeps it beating. And for that one, they actually took me down to theatre to go and have the surgery.
Welcome to Audio Mo. Make some audio every day throughout the month of June. Drop it on your socials with a quick description. Use the hashtag Audio Mo so everyone can find it and listen to and leave a nice comment on what you did.